Warm greetings from CNS. Welcome everyone to this very special webinar on preference in the Global Tobacco Treaty, which is formally called WHO Framework Convention on. Since almost 16 to 17 years, CNS team members have been part of Network of Tobacco Transnationals, or NAT, hosted by Corporate Council, which was earlier called INFACT. NAT has worked dedicatedly to protect the global treaty and its implementation from tobacco industry interference. The World Health Organization recognizes how tobacco industry interference thwarts public health. Our governments have sustainable development goals at last year's UN General Assembly, one of which is to effectively the FCTC. We will fail to meet the Sustainable Development Goals, or SDGs, if we let the industry delay, dilute, defeat, or derail the progress. Today's panel of experts will share more on this. But before that, let me make all participants are requested to please send us your questions while panelists present. Just type your questions in using chat function or raise your virtual hand, which you will see on your screen. We'll take up these questions during the question and answer session. I also request all panelists to please present so that we have good enough time left for questions and answers. Thanks for your cooperation. Without any further ado, let me welcome today's webinar moderator, Ashok Ramsurup. Ashok Ramsurup is a senior and widely acclaimed award-winning journalist based in Durban, South Africa, with years of rich experience in journalism. Mahatma Gandhi's granddaughter, Ila Gandhi, and CNN heard this year's Health Justice Lifetime Achievement Award on Ashok Ramsurup in Durban, South Africa. Congratulations, Ashok, and over to you now.
Thank you kindly for that warm welcome. Well, I bring you warm greetings from Durban, South Africa. Tobacco industry interference in public health is also here in South Africa and in the rest of Africa. Let me share an example to give you a sense of how dangerous it is to public health. A transnational tobacco company has sued the Minister of Health of South Africa in recent years, claiming that the Tobacco Products Control Act was unconstitutional. But the court found that the hazards of tobacco smoking far outweigh what industry was claiming. And the court noted that South Africa is a party to the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control and is obliged to have regard for the requirements of that treaty. Having a strong global tobacco treaty is so important to keep industry out in countries, too, from health policy making. Now, let me introduce the panel of experts. Stella Villos, Associate Professor at University of California, San Francisco School of Nursing, and advisor to the World Health Organization. Samuel Ochieng, Chief Executive Officer of Consumer Information Network Kenya, and part of leadership of Network for Accountability of Tobacco Transnationals, NET. Claude Franco, Senior International Organizer, Challenge Big Tobacco Corporate Accountability International, and also leads NET. But before we go to our first panelist, let us listen to a special guest today on the webinar, noted journalist Maitri Porecher. Maitri, is now over to you, and let's hear your views. Maitri, are you there? Maitri, can't hear you. It's over to Maitri.
Maitri, can you hear us? We cannot hear you, Maitri.
I can't hear you, Maitri.
Okay, I think we can begin with Stella. I think as Maitri must be having some IT issues at her end.
Great. Okay. Let me introduce our next panelist, Stella Bielis, Associate Professor at University of California, San Francisco School of Nursing and Advisor to the World Health Organization. It's now over to Stella. It's over to you, Stella.
Yes, hi. Can everybody hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, great. Thank you for inviting me to participate in this very important webinar, particularly as we are all getting ready for the Conference of the Parties, the 7th Conference of the Parties that will be hosted by India. I am just going to very briefly give a little background on what is tobacco industry interference and why are we talking about it, because many times, I'm trying to show my screen here. I hope it's showing. Yes.
Yes.
Good. I'm trying to. Thank you. Because we talked about tobacco industry interference a lot, particularly those of us who are involved in tobacco control, and it may not be clear to everybody what exactly do we mean by tobacco industry interference. Why do we need to address it? Why is it different than any other business that tries to promote their own interests? And what can we do to actually address it once that we identify that is something we do need to do? So just as a reminder that the WHO during World No Tobacco Day 2012 actually did a really great job in trying to group the different types of interference from the tobacco industry in 6 main categories. One is maneuvering to hijack the political and legislative process, and that's something we see mostly through lobbying, campaign contributions, financial contributions to different political endeavors or initiatives. The industry also tends to exaggerate its economic importance. Every time we hear about in any country about the importance of the industry, tobacco industry contribution to the economy, is never tempered with the costs, the environmental costs, and of course the human suffering a disease and death that it costs, not just cost to individuals and families and communities, but also to countries and national health systems. They also manipulate the public opinion in an effort to gain an appearance of respectability. Tobacco companies in general are not very trusted because now we know that for decades they knew about the harms of tobacco and hid that. And so one of the ways they do that is through very widespread corporate social responsibility programs where they do quote-unquote charity in order to become essential members of the communities and to become really woven within the fabrics of our societies, which is, again, to create sort of a dependence on their economic largesse, not to accounting that for each little bit that they may contribute in a corporate social responsibility program, they actually gained a lot either by delaying legislation and, of course, costs of people that continue to suffer and be addicted to tobacco products. They fabricate support through front groups, and I'm going to discuss that one in more details in just a minute. They continue to discredit proven science for decades, the industry, for example, denied that secondhand tobacco smoke was harmful to health, and they created a whole array of programs where they would fund scientists, their own and others, to create science to counter that or to divert attention to other issues. And of course, the last one, or not the last but not least, which is one that we see very frequently now, is intimidating governments with litigation or threats of litigation. And just in our introduction, we already heard about that, both in domestic court and now increasingly threat of litigation in international courts. But I want to go back to a little bit about this fabricating support through front groups. And a lot of it is front groups, but some of it is allies. And these are groups that the industry either create it themselves or that they fund to represent its interests. And so it gives a voice to tobacco industry without being recognized as the industry. It creates some controversy or sometimes none exist. For example, it still creates controversy about the issues of taxation and that taxation leads to crime, where in fact we know that taxation leads to decreasing consumption. And it creates an appear that the industry is not alone, that they have all these other stakeholders from different sectors in society that support them. And that's very important because as we are going into the COP, we are seeing a very, very significant level of activity from some of these groups. For example, the International Tobacco Growers Association and similar national associations was entirely really created by the tobacco industry, not to protect the growers, who are usually the weakest link in the whole tobacco production chain, but to protect its own interests, pretending to be the growers. We see groups that pretend to represent, and I quote unquote, concern citizens and taxpayers. And so trying to speak in the voice of people who are taxpayers. And taxpayers should be concerned, but not with tobacco control, but with the tobacco companies and the cost they impose in society. And they also fund or partner with conservative think tanks and economic research institutes, ITIC being one. And a very current example is the Reason Foundation, which is published and got a lot of publicity for a report on claiming lack of transparency in COP procedures. So the Article 5.3 of the Framework Convention recognized the harms of the industry to advancing tobacco control, and this is what it actually says. In setting and implementing the public health policies with respect to tobacco control, parties shall act to protect these policies from commercial and other vested interests of the tobacco industry in accordance with national law. I want to highlight that in accordance with national law is a fairly standard treaty, and it doesn't mean that your country needs to have a comprehensive tobacco control law before they can implement Article 5.3. And in fact, that's another set of misinformation being propagated by the industry and its allies. That just means that, of course, you're not going to do something that is against the law, and it's fairly standard treaty language. Other treaties have similar language. And then again, it doesn't mean that you can't act on 5.3 until there is some sort of national comprehensive legislation telling you to do so. The guidelines for Article 5.3 offer a lot of details on how parties can actually do this protection of policies from industry and influence. And very importantly, it recognizes incompatibility between tobacco industry interests and public health interests, which means we can never, ever be partners in tobacco control with the tobacco industry. We can never partner with the industry when we are developing, implementing, or enforcing our tobacco control policies. And the recent impact assessment to the COP highlights the importance of implementing Article 5.3. This is the how. This is how we're going to stop it. And it talks about how the role and activities of the global tobacco industry remain by far the most important obstacle to action across all aspects of the FCTC. It interferes with implementing smoke-free laws and interferes with implementing comprehensive bans on advertising and sponsorship, interferes with raising taxes, etc. So strong and coordinated and transparent application of Article 5.3 across all government, this is a whole of government effort, is a high priority for us for the progress and implementation. And I will stop here, and I believe, are we taking questions now or later?
We'll take the questions later, Stella.
Okay, so I'll
wait. After all panelists have presented.
Thank you very much for your opportunity.
Thank you very much. Well, that was our first panelist, Stella Villalobos, Associate Professor at the University of California, San Francisco School of Nursing and Advisor to the World Health Organization. Well, Stella set the perfect stage for us, but now, earlier on, we had the gremlin setting into our IT, and let me introduce our very first panel of experts, a noted journalist, Maitri Poresha. Let's listen to her, and she's a very special guest today on the webinar. Can you hear me?
We can see her screen now, Maitri.
Go for it.
Can you hear us?
Can't hear you.
Hello. Hello.
Yes,
hello.
We can hear you.
Hey, yeah, you're loud here.
Yeah, okay, all right. Give me a second, please. Are you being able to hear me now?
Loud and clear.
Okay, so I'm presenting on the industry interference in basically obstructing journalists from writing what they have to write against the tobacco industry. Very recently, I got two emails from the Reason Foundation. But before that, I would like to present the second slide, which says that there has been an influence of fossil fuel industry as well on climate talks. Now, this is about drawing parallels. The World Coal Association... Can you hear me?
No, please... Please make the slides full screen, Maitri, please. Make the slide.
I'm not being able to maneuver this properly.
Okay, fine. Then go ahead.
Can it be maneuvered by the organizer?
You have, I think. It's fine. You go ahead. Whatever you were showing, please show again. Yes.
Okay. Now the
slide right.
Yeah, the oil companies they aggressively keep lobbying, you know, in the European Union. Now basically that is when they are the ones who are influencing the meetings in climate change. Now if we were to take a parallel of how tobacco companies are you know, basically the question being, should they be allowed to be a part of the FTCC talks or not? And here there is a joint consensus on the fact that they should not be allowed to be a part of these talks as they are influencers in a negative way. I got an email on September 16, 2016, and it was a very shocking email. Now, the Reason Foundation told me that the WHO tobacco treaty is actually a threat to public health. They also said that the documents which were released by WHO in advance of a November meeting, which is to be held now, they allege that WHO has been operating in secret to limit access to new technologies. Now, new technologies, by that they mean e-cigarettes. Now, they also claim that e-cigarettes have helped people to quit smoking. Now, this is actually, there has been no proof on the fact that e-cigarette has helped people to quit smoke. On the other hand, everyone in unanimous consensus, WHO, the union, there is the Indian government, the Indian national government, and the Maharashtra state government have contemplated and in their own capacities banned the usage of e-cigarettes. And therefore, the claim made by the Reason Foundation is therefore looks very hollow. So that is the point that I am wanting to make in this meeting. Now, I have covered the topic of e-cigarettes myself at various levels, and I'll take a minute to make you understand what kind of problems are caused by e-cigarettes. The Deputy Controller of Drug Abuse in the United States, Richard Crompton, he himself had admitted to the fact that e-cigarettes are harmful because little children, if they have access to their parents or grandparents' e-cigarettes, they have sometimes unloaded the cartridge and have consumed the nicotine, the liquid nicotine, and therefore have all, the e-cigarettes have also caused deaths in certain cases, including the death of a 2-year-old Israeli girl. Now, that has been well documented. Apart from that, e-cigarettes, which were, you know, they were sort of hauled up by the Maharashtra Food and Drugs Administration inspectors, they had showed that the amount of nicotine in the e-cigarettes is 11 mg, and the amount of nicotine which is permissible to wean off a person from smoking in chewies, the nicotine chewies, is 2 to 4 mg. So naturally, the e-cigarette companies are not making it public as to how much nicotine contents are available in the particular e-cigarettes. Now, all of this, you know, sort of makes us extremely wary about the fact that e-cigarettes are being used. Another example was that e-cigarettes were being sold in the Indian airline carrier Air India, and certain people had sort of objected to this, after which Air India had to withdraw the sale of e-cigarettes in their airline. These were certain cases of activism which were undertaken by the media and the public health activists in Bombay and in India in order to curb the and regulate the sale of e-cigarettes. Another point that I wanted to make was the former health minister in the 45th union meeting in Barcelona, Dr. Harshvardhan, had said that India is contemplating a ban on e-cigarettes. However, the former health minister was removed from his particular position in the last year, and some other health minister was appointed in his place. Now, this was being touted as a move which was lobbied by the tobacco companies, which were allegedly influencing the decisions of the government of India. All of this goes to say that there is an increasing interference of tobacco lobby as seen in India, and that is the case that I wanted to present, which are influencing journalists and the government to their derailing efforts to bring about a stronger negotiations in FTCC. That is all I had to say. I hope you've been able to hear me well, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. That was Maitri Porecha, and very noted journalist, for sharing this outrageous example almost in real time. So important when COP7 to FCTC is about to open next month. Well, there is no doubt we need to keep people before profits. Now let us hear from Samuel Ochieng, Chief Executive Officer of Consumer Information Network in Kenya, and who is also among the leadership of Network for Accountability of Tobacco Transnationals, or NET. It's now over to you, Samuel.
Thank you very much. I'll not share a slide because most of the slides I wanted to share have already been shared by the others. I want to take it up from what Stella stated, and I want to share two examples. One, the BAT bribery in Africa with the focus on Kenya. And you will all remember that last year, on the 30th of November, there was that expose by the BBC Panorama program, where it showed that BAT had bribed a number of public officials in a number of countries in East and Central Africa, including Kenya, Uganda, Burundi, and other countries. This is a was BAT was bribing them. It spent tens of thousands of dollars, and basically these were trips abroad. They were, you know, payments, and these were focusing mainly on politicians. The focus, of course, was to ensure that BAT has a bigger market, to intimidate its competitors in the market, and to ensure that there was no legislation, and also to influence those positions of those countries in international decision making. This is something that we've been fighting here in Kenya. We've had to take it to the Anti-Corruption Commission, and we are also trying to see how we can have it in Parliament as well. We've had a lot of petitions, and this is a clear example of how BAT has been interfering, and this they were caught flat-footed. As we are talking now, we are having a case in court where BAT has stopped the implementation of the tobacco control regulations. These regulations, 2014, were to come into effect on the 6th of June last year. But in April, they went to court, and they managed a stay. They went to court suing the Minister for Health for coming up with these regulations. These are the regulations which are to bring about things like pictorial warnings, the graphic health warnings, and to, you know, put some solatium or some levy which would be used to try and manage some of the health effects that are brought about by tobacco use. So they managed to stop this, and we were in court for a long time until March this year, when we won, because the CIN was also enjoined as an interested party in this case. And we won the case. And then the regulations were to take effect 6 months later. That was this September, the 26th. Again, 3 days before the regulations took effect, they went to court again, and now they're in the Court of Appeal, and they're appealing the decision of the High Court, which gave us the victory that the implementation of the regulation should go ahead. So again, they managed to get another stay of another 30 days. So you can imagine that these are regulations which were supposed to take effect on the 5th of June last year, and until now, more than 1 year later, 15 months later, they are still dragging us in court when they know very well that we are winning this case. So this is a critical case of the kind of delay that is there. The intimidation of BAT to the Kenyan government does not start now. It has been there before. We remember in COP5 in Seoul, Korea, they managed to follow up the government, the delegation of Kenya, and you know, even sent letters while the delegation was at the COP. They sent letters to the Minister of Foreign Affairs claiming that the position that the Kenya government was presenting at the COP was not the position that was agreed. And this is actually not true. And we managed to try and, you know, stop this and support the Kenya delegation at the COP. We have to watch out as we go to India. Some of the things that they are already starting to do is that they are trying to manipulate the positions that the countries are developing. They are trying to influence those positions so that those positions to the COP are weak, those positions to the COP are influenced, and if they manage to do that, then they feel very good about that. If they do not, then they still even follow up. They sponsor part of the government delegation or some of the delegations to COP, or they even sneak in and are part of those delegations, either as you know, experts or as you know, officials, consultants, or whatever titles that they use. So we have to watch out on this and make sure that this one does not continue. The issue about the increase also of the BAT budget. In April this year, BAT had their annual general meeting in the UK. And one of the things that astonished us, we had a mock AGM also here in Kenya, one of the things that astonished us is that they managed to sneak in to have a budget of 100,000 sterling pounds for BAT and its subsidiaries of what is called donations, political donations. This is very, very scary, knowing that having such a budget is like legitimizing bribery, legitimizing corruption, and this is money that is not well, it doesn't say properly what this money is going to do. So it's money that they are looking ahead to using for countries which have elections coming ahead, like Kenya having elections next year, then they're able to, you know, buy off politicians, try to have politicians to block legislation and this kind of things. So I just wanted to share those examples and warn us that we have to be very, very careful in terms of the preparation of the country positions. We have to be very, very careful also in the delegations and where the money comes, who is paying for who, is sponsoring who, and we have to make sure that those people present themselves also as consultants or as experts. Some of them are actually molds of the tobacco industry. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Well, that was Samuel Ochieng, Chief Executive Officer of Consumer Information Network in Kenya, and who is also among the leadership of Network for Accountability of Tobacco Transnationals, or NAT. Well, grim concerns have been raised. So shocking to hear the insidious and outrageous strategies tobacco industry uses to grow its markets. Saving lives is so important. We have amongst us NAT leader, Claude Franco, who is a senior international organizer of Challenge Big Tobacco campaign at Corporate Accountability International. It's over to you, Claude.
Great, thank you all very much. I have a PowerPoint that I'm happy to share if I have the ability to do so.
Hi, Claude.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Great, well, thank you all very much. I'm really honored to be here today. And again, my name is Chloe Franco. I'm based out of the United States with Corporate Accountability International. We're one of the accredited observers to the WHO SCTC, and we'll have a team in New Delhi next month. And I'm excited to follow up on the presentations given by the earlier panelists by shedding a little bit of light on what tobacco industry interference looks like at the conferences of the parties themselves and the anticipated action by parties that we could see at this upcoming COP in India. Great. So Stella already gave a really great background on Article 5.3, so I think I'll jump over this pretty quickly. But what's important to recognize is that Article 5.3 itself is, we refer to it as the backbone of the SCTC. It's the element of the treaty that enables tobacco industry interference to be rooted out of the process so that other policies can take place. And when we think about the conferences of the parties themselves, it's kind of the same concept that by ridding the conferences of the parties from tobacco industry representatives infiltrating the process, that's how we have the best opportunity to ensure that those that are in the room at the negotiations are able to advance the strongest policies to protect public health and save lives. So there are two primary ways that the tobacco industry has managed to infiltrate and therefore undermine the COPs. The first is through attending as members of party delegations. And the second is through attending as members of the public. Right now, there is no screening process for party delegations. And what that means is that if an industry representative manages to secure an invitation to be a part of a formal party delegation, then they are accepted as part of that delegation because there's no screening or vetting process currently carried out by the convention secretariat. And this gives those representatives immense access to undermine the negotiations directly. And then in regards to the public, as a result of the Secretariat's commitment to transparency, the Secretariat allows a set number of quote-unquote public representatives into the negotiations every year. And this process, too, has no screening associated with it, and it operates on a first-come, first-served basis. And for this reason, the industry has been able to consistently exploit the process over past years. And I want to take a quick moment to note that the Article 5.3 guidelines were developed to further support and provide guidance, for lack of a better word, to parties as they go about implementing Article 5.3, both in their countries but also at the international level. And in particular, the guidelines state that parties should not nominate any person employed by the tobacco industry or any entity working to further its interests to serve on delegations to meetings of the CAP. So again, the guidelines are very clear when it comes to the fact that the tobacco industry should not be present or participating in the CAP negotiations themselves. So I'll talk a little bit in a little bit more detail about industry participation on delegations. And despite the very clear line in the guidelines, industry representatives still find their way onto delegations with regularity. In fact, according to an analysis carried out by the Secretariat of the Convention, at least 11 parties have sent tobacco industry representatives to COPs, many of them multiple times. These representatives include state tobacco monopolies, specialized tobacco agencies, tobacco associations, and additional organizations. And this number is actually probably low because it only includes individuals whose ties to the industry can be clearly identified through their formal business titles. And it goes without saying, but this is a public health treaty. So delegations representing tobacco industry interests run counter to the public health intentions of the treaty. And this is why the guidelines set out to exclude them in the first place. And further to what Sam shared a moment ago, I'd like to shed a little bit of further light on another revelation that came as a result of the BAT bribery scandal. As Sam mentioned, last year, a whistleblower from British American Tobacco came forward and revealed a conspiracy of bribery in Central and East Africa by BAT. And the example that I want to bring forward is that BAT bribed SCTC delegates from Rwanda, Burundi, and Comoros in order to undermine tobacco control policymaking. And most specifically, an SCTC representative from Burundi was specifically bribed to represent BAT's interests at one of the international SCTC negotiations. So this goes to show that even if an individual's title doesn't necessarily clarify that they're representing the tobacco industry, there could be additional tobacco industry interests present at the COPs themselves. And I'll take a moment to talk about tobacco industry infiltration of the public. So the FCTC has a commitment to transparency, as I mentioned, and for this reason it provides a limited number of public badges. As I mentioned, there's no vetting process for this, and they're given out on a first-come, first-served basis. And so to paint a picture of what this unfortunately looks like in practice, it means that every year tobacco industry representatives line up early in the morning at the COPs and ensure that they receive the vast majority of the badges intended for the public. And what this means is that tobacco industry representatives are able to roam freely throughout the COP space. And through doing so, they have the opportunity to intimidate and manipulate delegates, to lobby delegates without revealing their true identities and their conflicts of interest with public health, and also to access confidential draft documents that are developed in side meetings during the process. A couple quick examples to pull forward. For those of you who aren't familiar with the Illicit Trade Protocol, it's a protocol that was developed within the SCTC, and the tobacco industry has been found complicit in illicit trade multiple times over the past few decades, so it has made multiple efforts to undermine and infiltrate the protocol. And at the third round of negotiations toward the Illicit Trade Protocol, in fact, a survey concluded that 23 out of the 28 people who were willing to identify themselves within the public gallery, which was overlooking the negotiation space, were employed directly by the tobacco industry. So these individuals represented British American Tobacco, Japan Tobacco International, Philip Morris International, and Imperial Tobacco, among others. And these are the names of all of the, what we refer to as big tobacco, the largest and most powerful transnational tobacco corporations. So as a result of this and further interference, parties have been forced to eject the public from the final negotiating rounds for the illicit trade protocol and from the last two COPs, so COP 5 and COP 6. And they're unfortunately anticipated to do so again this year until we are able to advance a comprehensive policy to protect the policymaking space from tobacco industry interference. And I think notably for this webinar, since it's focused on media, it's important to note that right now the media and the public enter the COPs under the same badge. So what that means is that the industry's manipulation of this public badge has in recent years had the unintended consequences of removing the media entirely from negotiations. And so that's another really important reason why we need to advance a strong policy at this COP that can ensure that we are not excluding the media unnecessarily from the process. So I want to take a really quick step back to recognize how the industry is manipulating this issue in order to attempt to shame and attack the convention secretariat directly. And Stella already touched really effectively on the tobacco industry interference in the form of front groups and other associations that are doing the bidding of the tobacco industry. One of the most notable examples of this, as she mentioned, is the International Tobacco Growers Association and other tobacco growing other farming associations. First of all, it's worth noting that IFGA includes all of the major tobacco international corporations on its list of supporter members that finance the organization, and this again includes PMI, BAT, JTI, Imperial, Alliance One, and Universal Leaf. And internal documents have revealed that IFGA has been a front group of the tobacco industry since its conception back in 1984. Most recently, IFGA held its annual conference in New Delhi just last month and used this as an opportunity to put pressure on the Indian government to allow farmers to participate in the COP itself and to secure multiple media articles claiming that IFGA should have a seat at the table at COP 7. And you can see on the right side of the screen some examples of some of the headlines that they secured through that meeting. And then Stella also touched on, and actually Maitri touched on this as well, the role of think tanks in harping on transparency and securing op-eds truly around the world in key countries in advance of the COP that attempt to, again, shame the Secretariat for its lack of transparency that is truly a result of tobacco industry interference that has forced parties to take action to exclude the public. So finally, the good news is that there is a solution to all of this, and that solution is to bring the COPs in line with Article 5.3 through advancing a policy that ensures that tobacco industry representatives are not admitted into the COP itself. And so parties will be addressing this issue at COP 7 coming up next month. And what one of the things that we anticipate is for parties to consider a proposal to screen tobacco industry representatives in order to exclude them from delegations, from the public, and from the media. And another proposal is to actually separate the accreditation process for the public and the media. So that genuine members of the media are able to have access to the COPs themselves so that they don't have to be watching from the sidelines in the way that they have been forced to in recent years. And that is all from me. And I'll be happy to take questions and we have a Q&A period.
That was our final panelist, NAT leader Claude Franco, who is a senior international organizer of Challenge Big Tobacco campaign at Corporate Accountability International. You heard the panelists speak out loudly. Participants, please keep sending questions using chat functions or raise your virtual hand on the webinar screen. Now, let's begin the question and answer session. It's now over to my colleague, Shobha Shukla, who will be moderating the Q&A session. It's now over to you, Shobha Ji.
Thank you, Ashok. Again, many virtual hands raised. So I would like the participants to please ask the questions themselves. Would Aarti Dhar, former assistant editor of The Hindu, like to ask a question? Yes, Aarti, can you hear me? Is Aarti listening? Yes. Anybody who would like to ask the question? Ramesh Chand Chauhan of All India Institute of Medical Sciences, Delhi. Ask your question, please.
I've asked because when they register, there are some details that they provide.
Can everybody hear me? Can you all hear me?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Ramesh from All India Institute of Medical Sciences, Delhi, wants to know that is okay, but how does tobacco industry influence the journalists? Can my question be heard? Can the panelists hear me?
This is Chloe, Shobha. I wasn't quite able to catch. Could you repeat the question?
Yes. He wants to know that industry is influencing the politicians, but is it not influencing the journalists as well? How do we address that? Any of the panelists can answer the question.
This is Chloe. I'm happy to speak to this, and I think that the other panelists are probably well positioned to speak to it as well, so I'll be extremely brief. It's absolutely true that the tobacco industry does influence journalists, and I think a key part of that is, of course, educating journalists to have an understanding of the FCTC and Article 5.3. to ensure that they recognize the conflict of interest if, for instance, they are asked to publish something coming from the tobacco industry. And then I think it's wonderful, for instance, in the way that Maitri came forward and was able to share directly the request that she's received from the tobacco industry to publish their materials. In terms of the COPs in particular, it's absolutely true that the tobacco industry does also attempt to infiltrate and undermine the COP and shape the messaging through influencing journalists directly. And so similar to this webinar where there was a brief conflict of interest disclosure question, one of the proposals that parties will be considering at the COP this year is to ensure that representatives of the media as well are asked to disclose any conflicts of interest, and for instance, whether they've ever received funding from the tobacco industry to do their reporting before, in order to ensure that, only genuine, well-intentioned members of the media are, that those are the individuals that are reporting on the COP as well. And again, I'm sure other panelists have something they'd like to add as well.
Just to add on what Chloe said, I think basically at the national level, you find at times it's very, very difficult to get tobacco control stories across the media, or at least some of the media. And this is because some of the tobacco industry companies, BAT and others, some of them work very, very closely with the editors and try to, you know, make sure that some of those stories do not see the light of day. At the COP level, of course, we have, maybe they pay for the some of the journalists to get there, some of the media personnel, I'm not saying all of them, but that's why we need the screening. And you find that they are very much informed, the tobacco industry is very, very much informed in terms of what's happening. These guys keep tweeting them, keep informing them, keep updating them, and then they're able even to, you know, strategize even when they're not at the COPs. So these are entry points that they use the journalists to try and influence, to pay for the trips and to pay for, you know, luxurious trips abroad and all that. And then this is something that we need to really monitor so that it doesn't infiltrate the COPs as well.
Thank you. Aarti, would you like to ask your question? Aarti Dhar?
Can you hear me?
Ask a question.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can hear you clearly. Yes, Aarti, we can hear you. Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Yes, we can hear you. Please ask your... Yes, hello?
Yeah, I want to know
question.
What can be done to prevent interference by the tobacco industry? Do we need to amend FCTC, or what do you think can be done? Hello?
Would you like to answer? Hello? Stella, would you like to answer a question? Stella, please unmute yourself. Or if you would like to answer. Aarti Dhar is from India. Chloe or Stella, would you like to answer Aarti's question? Hello?
Yes.
Aarti wants to know what can
I change my mind. Great. Stella, are you there? I'm happy to let you go ahead. No, I'm happy to answer quickly. That's a great question.
I think
a really big and important point is to continue to ensure that, for instance, as journalists and representatives of the media, that you're thinking critically about the way that the tobacco industry is messaging and framing issues.
Yes.
And ensuring that you're exposing the ways that the industry slants and bends the truth. And the need to, for instance, strengthen or change the text of the treaty itself. I'm really happy to say that the text of the treaty is extremely strong. The guidelines that were developed for implementing Article 5.3 are about as strong as it could get. And so the important thing is to ensure that we are promoting Article 5.3 and that we are advancing it, for instance, at the national level through advancing comprehensive tobacco control laws that implement the treaty and Article 5.3, specifically at the national level.
And we are still trying
and then also
a little more detail how many people we have registered to date. And it seems that we can only guess one thing at a time. If we ask three things, we get one response. So we go back and ask two more things, and we get one response. It just seems to be the way it's working with this meeting. So we are trying to get a little more detail in terms of how many. We are having our own project with BMS, and the project meeting is going to be the day before. So most of these people are coming, and they're mostly oncology nurses. So they might be more interested in over there. Actually, a lot of them are interested in it. So I think we'll be a mix of where they're going to go. So
I believe Stella had actually given us the heads up that she had to take another call at some point during the what's happening right now. Apologies. But I think the important thing to note is that the treaty is really strong, and so what we can be doing is ensuring that it's being implemented at both the national level and the international level.
Thank you. How can journalists attend the 7th
talk to the morning coming to this free workshop? And again, it's going to be a mix because the programs focus on tomorrow. So our partners and champions really work across the full range from the clinical side. One of our nurses is in charge of the cancer registry, so very much interested in research. We have a nurse really interested in policy. She already testified in the Senate, so she's really interested. So I think I'm hoping that going forward, other people will register. And I know that there are, the one time we got an answer we had, and this was about a month and a half ago, I think we had about 8 to 10 people register. So that's not counting my 10. So I think we'll get a fair good number.
Okay, we have Joseph Magero from Kenya who wants to know that tobacco advocates do to create more awareness, especially in Africa, to protect FCTC from industry interference. This is a question from Joseph Magero from Kenya. Samuel, would you like to? Samuel, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, but I didn't get you while you're breaking. Joseph Magero saying what?
Okay. He's saying that as tobacco advocates do to create more awareness, especially in Africa, to protect FCTC.
Okay, he's breaking. But what I get is that he's asking how tobacco control advocates to create more awareness in Africa about FCTC?
Yes.
Yeah, I think basically that is something that we need to do. I know there are a number of organizations now, and in Kenya we have quite a number of organizations also working around issues of tobacco control. And we need the support of the media. I know we are using the social media very much as well, but I do agree with him that issues of FCTC and particularly Article 5.3, we need to escalate the awareness, and that is really, really critical in terms of making the
like 27th or something like that because of give and take. So that's about 3.5 weeks from now or so, because that will give us time to look at everybody's and if we need to make some changes to avoid too much overlap, we still would have time to do that as well.
Anybody else who would like to ask a question themselves from the participants? Anybody would like to ask a question from the participants? Govind Kumar Tripathi from the Southeast Asia office of the Union, the International Union Against Tobacco. He wants to know, you see the role of media and civil society as pressure groups involved to frame and adopt strict guidelines under Article 5.3. Government has ratified FCTC, but at the same time has 30% share in ITC company. Would somebody like to answer that? Hello? Hello, can you hear me? Maitri wants to answer a question, ask a question. Maitri, would you like to ask a question?
Hello?
Yes, yes, please ask, Maitri.
I would like to take Govind's question. Hello.
Yes, yes, we can hear you, Maitri. Please proceed.
Yeah, so can you please repeat Govind's question?
He said, what do you see, how do you see the role of media and civil society as pressure group adopt and strict guidelines under Article 5?
Right. He also mentioned that ITC has 30%, Indian government has 30% stake in the ITC. Yeah, the Indian Tobacco Company has been long creating menace in, you know, sort of influencing the government policies. It is also, media is a pressure group. However, Indian Tobacco Company sometimes does ensure that any sort of stories which are not in its favor are therefore not published in media, as rightly pointed out by Samuel. Indian Tobacco Company also engages in surrogate advertising by holding competitions and contests in schools. And therefore, very recently, the CBSE Board of Schools had banned the Spelbee competition which was being held by ITC. We have a notification issuing the same ban. And we had also printed the particular story where, the CBSE schools had banned any sort of contests or competitions which were organized by ITC as a corporate social responsibility initiative. Really, there is surrogate advertising and therefore a conflict of interest. So, yes, it is a tough war between the media, civil society, government and private tobacco companies. They do time and again try to influence by sending out press releases. Speaking for myself, they have never quite approached me to kind of shooting in their positive sense would be, they and such reason and understand this being a PR question. Please. What? The hurt.